Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. We're talking The Incredible Hulk. Hit it. It was 1978. The first solo North Pole expedition was completed. Turtlenecks were in. There were three popes. And Marvel's Green Goliath had a successful TV show. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. And joining me are not one, but two Totally Rad Christmas all-stars. My first guest is one of the elves of the Bodacious Tis the Podcast, Anthony Caruso. My second guest is the host of the Way Cool Christmas Clatter Podcast, Todd Killian. Guys, how's it going?
It's going well, Jerry. Thanks for having us.
I'm glad to be back, but I have two things to say. One, when I was listening to your intro, I thought you were describing Angry Anthony. We were going to discuss Angry Anthony this week. And number two, I'm kind of on edge here because the last time I did a show with both of you, I suffered a lot of emotional abuse on my part, and now I'm a little traumatized being back with both of y'all in the recording booth.
Oh, no. If we're talking Angry Anthony, I mean, it fits perfectly for this week. We're talking The Incredible Hulk. So, you know, we don't want to make Anthony smash. So.
I've been doing enough of that since Monday when a certain episode of a certain podcast.
which episode and which podcast might that be?
Why don't you tell the listeners, Todd?
That'd be the Merry Melee 1 episode of Christmas Clatter where Anthony took on Mike Westfall and Tim Babbs in a debate style format, and his showing was not that strong. So
yeah, I know you gave him a point for which
it was a mercy point.
But then I think in the end Alonzo and I ended up not going with that. I'm so sorry.
No,
you know what's funny is that you had a few really good points in there.
Yeah,
but you also used points that kind of worked against you, and I think that's what ended up doing it.
Listening back, it wasn't your points. It's just your points could be used against you the whole time.
That's what it was. Really what it was. You know. Like, yeah. So next time, I'm just going to give you the pointer as a judge. You know, next time, you know, try not to use something that could also work against yourself. Yeah.
One day. Two things. One, all I'm going to say is judges shouldn't go in with preconceived correct and incorrect answers in their mind. And two, Tom and I were talking about the next time, and Tom is preparing for it to be 2-on-1. People who listen to our show will get that joke.
Yep.
I see.
I'm going to destroy both of them.
I think I might label the next show the flamethrower, the rage machine, and the scalpel.
You got to call her like Dr. House or something. She was doing some serious browbeating on that episode of yours. She really got you into submission there. but anyway, well, that's not the topic here. No. We want to unleash Angry Anthony here, our resident Hulk. And, you know, but we're talking Incredible Hulk. And I got to say, guys, what's your experience you know, what are your thoughts on the Hulk in general, but on the Incredible Hulk TV show in particular?
Oh, you can go first, Todd, if you're about to speak out.
Oh, well, I remember as a kid waiting for, I believe, MASH to go off the air so I could watch the Hulk. And I thought for the longest time that MASH was like an hour-long TV show because it seemed like it took forever when I was 6 and 7 years old.
It sure did.
Right?
But, you know, I've learned to love MASH since then, but I just remember trying to get through MASH so we could get to the Incredible Hulk. And then I remember not really paying attention until the Incredible Hulk was on screen and doing his thing.
Yeah.
And
I did that a lot too.
and then growing up and start become a, you know, not a real heavy comic book collector, but into it a little ways, Hulk was one of the titles I always gravitated towards and snagged a hold of, especially there in that run in the late 80s, early 90s, where he turned gray for a short period of time. And Joe Fix It, and I really enjoyed that run quite a bit.
Right on. What about you, Anthony?
So much to Todd's consternation, everybody knows that I'm a huge Batman fan, and I believe Batman is the best and the greatest. And we've talked about this on the show before, so I'm not going to rehash my history, but he's been in my life from the beginning. Close second growing up was the Hulk. You know, I kind of want to talk to a therapist about what it means that my favorite Marvel and my favorite DC characters are both the angry, violent ones. But, but yeah, I always loved the Hulk. And even though the show was before my time, it was they weren't making new episodes by the time I was old enough to appreciate it.
Right.
Like a young child. I still caught it in repeats, and I watched this and Batman 66 all the time.
Nice.
And, you know, back then it was like, it's not like now where we have an abundance, almost like a oversaturation of the superhero market, right? Mm-hmm. Back then, you grabbed what you could get. So mm-hmm. it was like
pretty much Linda
Carter's Wonder Woman, Wolverine mm-hmm. the Hulk, Batman 66, the old Christopher Reeves movies. Like, and it's funny because back then, apart from The Flash, that mm-hmm. old Flash 90s, I love that one.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually, listing those off, that DC used to dominate, and now it's mm-hmm. Marvel's era.
Yeah.
But the Hulk, I always loved it. Like you, Todd, I always waited for Lou Ferrigno to come on screen mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. the Hulk. I found myself waiting tonight, watching this episode, for him to show up as the Hulk. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's something about the character, I think, that a lot of readers, especially if you go to the stereotypical who you would think of reading comic books, appreciate, like that meek, nerdy guy who's very intelligent, very smart, couldn't hurt a fly as himself. He just is able to Hulk out, like when he gets angry, and save the day and defeat the bully. And I think that resonated with me as a geeky loner child who was pushed around at school a lot. Mm-hmm. I think it resonates with a lot of kids who go through that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I agree for sure. I mean, that I'm similar to both of you guys. I watched the show growing up, and it was one of those where I also kind of was a little checked out a little bit, you know, until the Hulk came in, and then I was all in, you know, just, mm-hmm. yeah, the Hulk. Funnily enough, I actually have a story. So I used to love it so much that it was one summer, I think I was like six or seven, and my mom signed me up for swimming lessons. And it was like $10, you know, $10 lessons, something like that. And I refused to go because the Incredible Hulk was on. I wanted to finish this episode of the Hulk. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up not going. My mom was furious at me. You know, I was punished. And then a few weeks later, we ended up going to the zoo. And in the parking lot, we found a $20 bill. And so, you know, we of course, there was no one there. It was completely empty. So we picked it up and kept it. And little smart alecky me said, you know, see, if I had gone to swimming lessons, you know, you wouldn't have made $10. She did not appreciate that, but but yeah, she, you know, it was during that time that I would have been at swimming lessons, and so you know, we were net $10, and so I thought that was kind of cool. But it's all because I wanted to watch The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, can I tell a Christmas related Hulk story?
Sure.
You just reminded me of by telling a personal story. So do you remember, it's not as popular nowadays, but definitely early 90s and prior, how work family parties were a big thing? Like your father would bring his family to like a work Christmas party. Mm-hmm. And they're not popular anymore, but that used to be a thing. And oftentimes Santa would show up, right? And have gifts for the children. So I was big into Hulk then. I remember this one Christmas work party. Santa came up to me and gave me a gift, and I opened it. And it was a Hulk toy, and it had the Bruce Banner action figure too. And you could put the Bruce Banner, like there was a slit in the Hulk's back, and put him in the Hulk, so he turned into the Hulk.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. It was my favorite toy that year.
It sounds awesome. Man, I would have wanted one of those. You know, it's funny because they did the Secret Wars line, and I don't even remember if Hulk is, I think he's in Secret Wars, but there was no Hulk toy that I can recall. And I could be way off base here. My memory might be failing me, but I mean, I don't recall a toy of the Hulk. And I mean, I think that would have been really awesome to have.
Yeah. I don't remember ever having a toy Hulk at all. Not that I could think of off the top of my head.
So I grew up, you know, in the early 90s, back before Marvel became mainstream, except for the Hulk, Spider-Man, and Wolverine. Those are the three big mainstream characters at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had toys of all of them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I had some of the other X-Men because the animated series was huge.
Right.
I still love that show.
It is. It's a good show. I mean, it's, you know, it's definitely of its time. But,
you heard there was a rumor Disney Plus wants to kind of revive it with original showrunners.
I have heard that. Yeah, that would be awesome. Although I know that Cyclops just passed away, the voice of Cyclops.
Oh, that's so
that was kind of a bummer. But
I loved those toys. I know I'm Mr. DC now, but Marvel had a big place in my childhood.
Right on.
The Hulk was also much must see TV Saturday mornings. That Hulk cartoon.
Yeah,
was
they had
really
a Hulk
good.
Cartoon. They sure did. And in fact, I think they revived it or you know, did another cartoon just a couple of years ago as well. It was like Hulk and the Agents of Smash or something.
It was actually
I never watched it though, but
yeah, it was pretty good. I never watched it all the way through, but what I seen of it, it was pretty good.
Right. The only Marvel cartoon I've really loved since the original X-Men, since the 90s X-Men, was the Spectacular Spider-Man. I thought that was a really good cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked the cartoon from the 90s Spider-Man one.
Yeah,
that one was good too.
Yeah. That Avengers run they had.
Earth's Mightiest
was pretty
Heroes.
Good. Yes,
that was pretty good. That was a good one. Fair. I like that one. Yeah.
Fair. You know, fair. I mean, it's no Justice League. But.
Well, you know, that's a whole nother thing. But I thought they did pretty good. And Hulk had a pretty good showing in that, I thought.
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
Ant-Man and the Wasp did. That's the Ant-Man and the Wasp I still want on the big screen.
Yeah, I know. I was so excited when they did Ant-Man and the Wasp on that. And they did it right. You know, it was like the original Avengers in together first. And then they brought in Captain America. And it was just, it was just like in the comics. It was great. But speaking of just like in the comics, they made quite a few changes from the TV show or from the comics in this TV show. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we'll get into it in a little bit. But the show itself, it began.
Can we bring up the obvious one since you brought it up? Why change the name? What's the point?
There actually was a reason.
not a good one.
Well, there's two depending on who you talk to. According to Lou Ferrigno, the director did not like the name Bruce because he thought it was too gay. Which is weird. I mean, that's a terrible thing to say, you know.
Batman's name.
Plus, you're preaching to the choir here.
At the time, Batman and Robin was the biggest Batman culture, so he came across as that way.
Well, that is true, yeah. But if you talk to the director on the commentary that they released, he actually says it's because he despised like the way comic books used alliteration. So, you know, Lex Luthor, Lois Lane, Bruce Banner, you know.
Love that about comics.
Well, yeah, but so because of that, he decided to change the name, and he used his son's name, David. Now, they did keep Bruce. In fact, if you see it on the tombstone, it does say David Bruce Banner in the beginning, in the intro, but they never use Bruce throughout the entire show run. Oh, man. In fact,
do you have a problem with alliteration in comics?
I don't.
I always like that.
No,
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I'm actually just pretty ambivalent about it. It doesn't bother me either way. But in the comics, and here's another thing, his name is Robert Bruce Banner because they actually messed up a few times. And even though he was originally named Bruce Banner, there was a few issues where he was named Bob Banner. And a lot of fans like actually wrote in and called Stan Lee out on it. And he was like, well, you know, his sometimes we make mistakes, but now because you said it, his full name from now on will be Robert Bruce Banner. And now we're all right. And so that's actually how he got his name, Robert Bruce Banner. But yeah, so that's like the very first thing that they changed about it, which I thought was odd. The show itself, actually, the two-hour pilot aired in November of 1977, but then the series proper didn't start until the following year, 1978. And so they made 80 episodes of it. This particular episode we're talking about tonight, the Thanksgiving episode, although there's barely any Thanksgiving in it, actually comes out...
Barely any Hulk in it.
There's barely any Hulk in it, yeah. Actually came out in 79, and... November of 79. So it's one of those where, you know, they tried to put a holiday in, and I guess, I mean, I can understand why Thanksgiving, but it seems like, you know, because he has a great line that, and we'll talk about it in a bit, but he has a great line where he's like, I just don't want to spend another Thanksgiving alone. It's like, that would have been perfect for Christmas. That's like a perfect Christmas line right there. I don't want to spend another Christmas alone. Mm-hmm. And why they didn't stick to that, I don't know. Like that would have been such a great episode, you know? Can you imagine if it was like same premise, but the whole thing was decked out in with like a tree and, you know, garland and wreaths and everything? I mean, I think it would have just really killed it.
And he's the one, like one of two superheroes you could do that with. That's a perfect premise for doing Christmas that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. So I think that was a big missed opportunity, but
yeah, it definitely was, but you know, just there wasn't that many holiday specials, you know, ran it through regular
TV
at
that time.
So, yeah.
And also it's good to see Thanksgiving get some love because I mean, Friends did Thanksgiving, like obviously it took Thanksgiving to the whole new level and made that thing. But prior to that, I mean, every now and then like Alf had a Thanksgiving episode, a two-parter, but you really don't, you didn't see then, and you really don't see a lot of times now. I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine is really the only one now. You don't see a lot of shows do Thanksgiving because they tend to bypass. I think it's because Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas fall so close together.
Yeah.
And it's usually a span of three episodes because then they go on break or hiatus. I think they don't want three or four episodes in a row of holidays, so they just usually leave Thanksgiving out.
Right.
See, if I were running a show, I would always have, like, every holiday, we would have some sort of holiday special. Yeah. At least every major holiday, you know? So, yeah, for sure, Halloween, for sure, Thanksgiving, for sure, Christmas. You know, so I think that's a, I mean, I don't get it, but I, you know, I get it. Or I get it, but I don't get it. I don't know. Yeah. Either, however you want to say it. But yeah, so they changed his name to David Bruce Banner. In this one, he's not only a scientist, you know, a biologist, but he's also a physician. Whereas, of course, in the comics, he's a physicist, you know, primarily a physicist. And
but haven't they kind of expanded upon that?
No,
Now, I feel like nowadays he has a doctorate and everything. Like he knows how to heal people. Like he does, like often bandage up the adventures.
Well, that's true, but you know, yeah.
I'm just saying, you don't have a comic medium on the show if you don't want me to point this stuff out.
No, well, you're right. It's just, you know, originally when he was created, he was just a physicist.
And trying to make a bomb.
It was a gamma bomb, you know. That's literally what he was working on, you know. So instead of a hydrogen bomb, he was just going to use, you know, gamma bomb. Whereas in this one, he's actually using this gamma radiation to enhance strength because his wife died in a car accident and he couldn't, you know, she was kind of like pinned by a car or something. He couldn't actually lift it and save her. He couldn't do anything to save her. And so she passes away. So he was doing all this gamma experimentation, you know, because he noticed that every time this people would exhibit these superhuman feats, you know, like moms rescuing, you know, lifting cars to rescue children, things like that. It was always during like a time of sunspots and there was gamma radiation coming from there. So he thought, hey, maybe I can use this to increase a person's strength. And he decides to do it. Now, unbeknownst to him, one of the assistants had actually like recalibrated the machine for something. And he accidentally gave himself like a ridiculous amount of gamma radiation. And so he becomes a Hulk. So it doesn't really have anything to do with with a gamma bomb, with the army, nothing like that. He didn't save Rick Jones trying to, like he does in the comics, you know. He's like, in the comics, yeah, he's working on this bomb. They're getting ready to test it. Literally like just a teenager is like there. And so he manages to race down, save, you know, get him into the shelter while he himself is exposed to this gamma bomb. And that's how he's bombarded with the rays and becomes the Hulk. So it's like, there's a lot of little differences here and there. And they also, which kind of drove me crazy as a kid, because I remember in the comics, he was a lot stronger, but they really reduced his powers. Yes. And they did it to maintain the believability of it, which makes sense. I mean, there's no really other superheroes until you get into, you know, no superheroes, no supervillains until you get into like the made-for-TV movie sequels. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I get it. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, Hulk wouldn't have problems fighting a bear. Or, you know, I mean, just all sorts of of little things like that. It's like, no, the Hulk, you know, doesn't really care about bullets that much. I mean, yeah, it stings him, but it doesn't, you know, hurt him. And I mean, just a lot of things like that.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. I mean, there's a whole comic debate, right? Can't the Hulk take on Superman?
Well, and then that kind of depends on who's writing it. So in their first crossover, it was kind of during that depowered phase. Because, you know, for some reason, superheroes over time just keep getting stronger and stronger and more powerful. So
I hate that, by the way.
What's that?
I hate that, by the way. You got to give them flaws.
Well, and so much so that when John Byrne took over on Superman post-crisis, he actually reduced his powers a lot. You know, and so it was the same thing here. The Hulk, when he first fought Superman, it was during, you know, one of a phase where he wasn't that really powerful, and he like punched Superman as Savage Hulk, which is supposed to be his strongest version. And Superman was just like, oh, you know, whatever. Like he literally just stands there and takes it, and no big deal. So, of course, now Thor, who was actually created to be stronger than the Hulk, he kind of stalemates the Hulk. And he actually fought Superman in one of the comics. And Superman said he was like the toughest opponent that he's ever faced. And so then it's like another one of those things like, okay, well, you had so much trouble with Thor, but then Thor and Hulk are about even. And then, I mean, it's just, you know, it doesn't matter. So of course, Stan Lee gives the best answer, which is like, it just depends on who the writer is. Yeah. Who's stronger?
I love how Stan Lee doesn't have time to like engage in these hypotheticals. He's just like, he's always like that. I've always loved that about him. He's just like, yo, that's the way I wrote it. That's why.
Yeah, exactly. But that's kind of what drove me crazy about this old Hulk. And I loved it. I always will love it. I love watching it still. But yeah, it's just like, oh, come on, Hulk is stronger than that.
You know, I didn't notice that as a kid watching it, but watching this episode, I was like, the Hulk would be out of this really fast, you know, and we'll get into that where I was thinking, man, he took the long way around to save the day.
It's yes, like,
you know.
I mean, the Hulk in this, and I know it's a product of its time, man, he just looks like an insane, like, mental patient escaping from the hospital and painting himself green. That's true what he looks like.
Yeah, he does.
Didn't Lou Ferrigno actually do the voice of the Hulk or the Roar or something in the first Avengers film?
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
he did. Yeah. And in both Incredible Hulk movies, the Ang Lee and later on, you know, with Edward Norton.
There's only one Incredible Hulk.
You know what I mean? the Incredible Hulk movie.
There's only one Hulk theatrical film.
I hope you're not talking about Ang Lee. Yeah.
no comment.
That's one. Those are two movies I wish I could splice up and keep good parts of it both and put them together.
Right?
Yeah.
Those are two movies I wish I could do that with, and then insert Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner.
Well, I'm surprised someone hasn't gone in and used that reface, you know, deepfake technology to make him, you know, as part of it. You know, that you think someone would have at least done it, you know, as a goof or something.
Right.
Or at least like a scene for like YouTube to go viral or something.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm surprised that hasn't happened. So anybody out there with those skills, feel free to do that and we'll enjoy it. We'll watch it a lot. It'll get a
time. I always preferred Ruffalo to Norton, by the way.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Ruffalo, I like Ruffalo. I actually did enjoy Edward Norton's his turn as it for a good part of it. I think there were some times where it was like, oh, now you're just being Edward Norton. But there were certain times where it was like, oh, you know what? He really can portray the sadness and the loneliness. And so I liked that part about it.
There were like two, it's almost like they played Bruce Banner from two different eras in the comics, right? Mark Ruffalo did a good job at that nervous energy, like not trusting anyone type thing. Like I love his, especially in that first Avengers movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's learning to become part of the team.
He
just has this nervous energy, always playing with his hands and his glasses and things. He just doesn't like being around any of them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ruffalo plays that great nervous, sad loser.
Yeah, he does.
You know, with no self-confidence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real tough to do, but he's also kind of got that little bit of a cool chill about him to where, you know, he's not super, you know, high strung like Edward Norton would be.
Right, right.
And it just comes across so much better. Ed Norton.
Neither one was really Bill Bixby either. Bill Bixby, who plays the Hulk in this episode we're going to be talking, he plays Banner in this episode we're talking about. He really, everything about him, he encapsulates, you know, the name of that theme is called The Lonely Man, and that's exactly what he is. He's the lonely man. He gets that like perfectly, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, so you're right. I think if you could take bits and pieces of each, and of course, Eric Bana, when he was Banner, he was dark.
Yeah.
He was dark, and yet his Hulk was neon green.
His Hulk was awful. But
yeah,
and he grew in size every time he got mad.
Oh my god, I hated that.
Me too. Yeah. That was ridiculous. Lou Ferrigno, that dude was huge. You know, he was just like, you saw him, and just, you know, his arms were like tree trunks, and it was like, oh, this guy, I can see why they picked him as the Hulk, because originally they had cast someone else, and I guess when they shot it, he just looked kind of puny. And I know Schwarzenegger was actually auditioned and he was going to be cast. And then they saw him on screen and he was too short to be the Hulk.
So Schwarzenegger is too short.
Yeah.
How tall is Lou Ferrigno?
Tall.
He doesn't
7 feet. I think
come across as too tall though.
I don't know. I know the Hulk is supposed to be 7 feet. I don't know if Lou Ferrigno was, but now I kind of want to know.
6'5".
6'5". Okay. So how tall is Schwarzenegger?
6'2".
So just 3 inches taller.
I guess so. Yeah. Well, it's probably the, not only just the height, but, you know, those guys are such massive bodybuilders.
Yeah.
You know, when you get, you know, that wide chested, maybe you look shorter on camera.
It could be.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If this show was made mid to early 2000s, like this type of style where you just painted someone green, it would be The Rock. That's the Hulk.
That's true. That is true. Yeah. They also made the choice in the series to not have the Hulk speak at all. And even in the comics, he still spoke. Stan Lee later said that, you know, when we started the show, Ken said to me, you know, Stan, sorry, that's my best Stan Lee there. I don't think the Hulk should talk. But, you know, the minute he said it, I knew he was right. And in the comics, I had the Hulk talking like this, Hulk crush, Hulk get him. I could get away with it in a comic, but that would have sounded so silly if he spoke that way in a television show, which is funny because now in the Avengers movie, you know, he still talks like that and he, you know, when he's smashing up Loki and he's like, puny god, you know.
But they do make fun of him, like, for being almost childish. Like, I loved in Infinity War after he got a candle on the Hulk. Or
Endgame. Yeah.
And they go back in time and they seem smashing everything. Mark Ruffalo's just like,
yeah.
He's so embarrassed by how he used to be.
But yeah, it works because they kind of play it off a little bit as comedy, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it works. And
like Downey calls it temper tantrums.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And and I didn't notice, and I had to be told this, but in the Avengers movies, anytime anybody calls Hulk, the Hulk Banner, he gets more angry.
Yep.
And then and when they call him the Hulk, he tends to be more responsive to what they're saying. So.
Well, and that's something that carries over from the comics as well. Yeah. You know, he hates, you know, puny Banner.
Right.
It's like he's the dominant personality kind of a thing. You know.
Yeah. What was that one comic arc, Jerry? And I'm sure they've done it multiple times over the years, but there's a famous one where they come face to face. Like, it's almost like a conversation between the two.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the issues because while I read it, I was never super into the comics of the Hulk. Because of the art style.
They split for a while.
They split a few times, yeah. Where they were literally like two different entities.
Yeah. At the end of that Joe Fixit run, there was a point where it was Banner and Joe Fixit kind of in Banner's mind together, holding back this big door to keep the Green Hulk back.
The Savage Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I think after when they finally, you know, remerged or whatever it was, that's when we got what is his name? There's a specific name they have for the smart Hulk that I can't remember.
Professor Hulk.
Professor Hulk. That's the one. Yep. That's when we got Professor Hulk after that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, they kind of did an Endgame, right?
They kind of did, yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of wish they had accidentally gone to the future and we could have seen like the Maestro or something like that. That would have been cool.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. And before we move on from the movies, can we just acknowledge for a minute that the Ed Norton movie set up Phil Dunphy from Modern Family to be
Doc Samson?
Yeah. Was it Doc Samson? Yeah.
Talking about Ty Burrell, right?
Yeah.
Ty Burrell was going to be Doc Samson because he played he played him, and then what's his name was going to be Samuel Stern, so the leader.
That's it.
He was going to be the leader. So they set up, two more of these villains that I would love to see in a solo Hulk movie if they ever did the right thing. But, you know, I mean, I don't see why they couldn't do something like they did with with Spider-Man and Cher. But, you know.
Yeah.
Like, just let Marvel do it all and just get the money from that.
Pretty much, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think Marvel has the movie rights back from Universal.
I don't know. I think they are... They have them only. They don't have the distribution rights, and that's why they don't. They can't.
That's why they put them in team up film.
That's what they can only do. That, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although, and I will say one last thing before we move on to the movies. I never thought I'd see the Hulk spare behind on a big screen.
Yeah, that was something else. And Thor's reaction was hilarious.
Oh, I loved the two of them. That like buddy cop. Adventure in space. Yeah,
I know. It's funny because there's like half of the people, the comic book fans I know, love it. And the other half of the comic book fans hate it because they're like, oh, they ruined both Planet Hulk and
Ragnarok.
And I'm like, well, no, they combined them, but they made it, you know, accessible to people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I would have loved to see like that whole Viking in space kind of thing go on with Thor and made it more serious, you know. But at the same time, I think that's why it works. And I don't think, I don't know if it would have worked as well. I think it would have been like a DC movie if they had taken it too seriously. And not that DC movies are bad. A lot of them are very, very, very good. In fact, you know, most people say that the Nolan trilogy is, you know, some of the best comic book movies ever made. So, you know, it's just, I think it would have been just too, taking itself too seriously if they had played it that way. And I don't know if it would have translated very well. I think it would have been a much smaller section of people that enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I like Ragnarok so much more than the first two Thor films because he didn't take himself too seriously anymore.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think comic book space stuff doesn't work seriously, you know, as you know, because there's just so much goofiness to it that if you take it seriously, it's just going to come off as corny.
It's very hard to do. So like, yeah. You know, Star Wars, I mean, it wasn't based off a comic book, but you know, Star Wars works, but look at how many people have tried to copy it and failed afterwards.
Right. Well, Star Wars is serious, but you also have like the Han Solo elements, character.
There are elements of humor
that make, it, yeah. You know, trying to think, you know, Star Trek's as a TV show was pretty serious, but when the movies came along, they slowly got a little bit more humor in them.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I loved those remake movies. The Abrams movies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying that there's a lot of other of sci-fi movies out there that tried to copy and failed miserably, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Star Trek, I mean, you look at the very first Star Trek film, and that was one that took itself very seriously.
Yes.
And terribly. Mm-hmm. And then, again, same thing in Star Trek 2. It was also very serious, but there was a little more fun with it. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole thing where Spock is trying to teach Savick and you know, where they kind of have like a little secret code between him and Kirk, you know, from the planet, mm-hmm. and him talking about him in space. And, you know, the whole, you lied. He's like, I embellished, or I forgot what he says. you know, I exaggerated. That's what he says. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's, you know, there's a little more playfulness there than there was mm-hmm. in that first one. And so you kind of see that, yeah, you in these big epic space things, you kind of need that. And I know we're talking, has nothing to do with the Hulk anymore. So we'll go back to that. But
I'm going to bring it back to the Hulk and just say,
okay, go for it.
For as funny as Thor Ragnarok was, once they get to Endgame, serious again, they are characters that can move between the comedy and serious mm-hmm. very good.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite Hulk moments on film, by the way, where Loki tells Thanos he's got a Hulk and then dives out of the way, and the Hulk just tries to beat the crap out of Thanos and fails.
Oh, in Infinity War? Yeah. Yeah.
And then he becomes a petulant child and just refuses to come out anymore. And right. I love that whole ongoing gag where Bruce Banner is like, come out, what is wrong with you? And just slapping himself.
No.
What do you mean, no?
Which is not anything we would ever see this Hulk do. I mean, this is like, once he's, you know, that's it. It's just, it's the anger in there.
Yeah.
Anger. It's Anthony.
But with the green eyes. Apparently those contact lenses, he could only wear those contact lenses for 15 minutes at a time because it would hurt so bad.
I can imagine, especially back then before
this was back when they were like those hard glass contact lenses, so it's like oh man, I can't even imagine how that works.
I know when I put mine in and they kind of get like a little fold or something, it's like I can't get those things out fast enough,
and a lot of the times it's besides the fact that they're glass and older, like the color lenses, even now, irritate actors so much because you can barely see through them.
Yeah.
So I can't even imagine what this guy, he was probably really channeling some rage when he was on set. Yeah.
Probably. And apparently, one last thing before we get into the episode, apparently they actually really wanted the director, you know, Kenneth Johnson, he really wanted the Hulk to be red instead of green. Because red is the color of rage, you know, green is more the color of envy. And so that was one of the things that Stan Lee, you know, who was the executive at Marvel at the time, was like, no, it's such an iconic image. You cannot make him red, which is funny. Cause then later on they introduced the Red Hulk. Of course that's Thunderbolt Ross, but
right.
You know, that's
why
like
did Stan Lee make the Hulk green?
He was gray and they changed him to green because of, some of the printing limitations is my understanding. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong with that, but that was,
it was either for color consistency or for budget reasons or both. I can't remember which it is, but yeah, green was either easier or cheaper or both. But that's the reasons I always heard.
Yeah. I mean, it does make sense. You do associate red with rage. So I wonder if they didn't have those constraints, if you'd be looking at a red Bruce Banner nowadays.
Right. Could be, honestly. Yeah. Which is,
and I think the reason they originally avoided green for the first episode or first issue or so is they didn't want him confused with Frankenstein's monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can see that because especially those older images, he had a much squarer head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's Jack Kirby, you know, it's like classic Jack Kirby right there. Mm-hmm. So, there was like tons of guest stars. and this whole thing, and you know, throughout its run, because it ran from 78 to 82, and it was just another one of those where just a lot of people wanted to be on it, you know. Of course, then they made some made for TV movies. They did the Return of Incredible Hulk. That's where we got Thor for the first time on screen.
This is bad, just so bad.
It is, but first, I watched it the other day. I was like, "Oh, this is awful!" But I can't stop watching it. I was so jazzed though as a kid.
I was so pumped to see that live.
Yep,
they advertised it for felt like months, and I think it was a Tuesday night, and I remember pulling up there. And even as a kid, I guess I was probably around 10 or so. And I was like, sorely disappointed. So sorely disappointed.
Well, he did Trial of the Incredible Hulk with Daredevil.
That one was good. Yeah, that was the follow-up. And that one I really enjoyed. Daredevil, he had that Frank Miller vibe with just, you know, in the all black. And both of those, actually, with the Hulk and the Daredevil, were meant to be like backdoor pilots. So they were supposed to be spun off into their own shows, like where Thor goes on quests to be worthy. And or you know, something like that, to be accepted back into Valhalla, something like that. And and then of course Daredevil was going to be fighting Kingpin, which they ended up doing in the Netflix show years later. But I would have liked to have seen, even in that era, I think I would have liked to have seen Rex Harrison as Daredevil. I think that would have been cool.
Would have been cool.
Yeah, but of course then the next one after that was The Death of the Incredible Hulk, and both the Trial and the Death movies were actually directed by Bill Bixby. And they were supposed to, because he dies at the end of that one of a heart attack while he's falling out of a plane. And so like he transforms back into Banner, and you know, that's it. He dies. But they were actually gonna do a fourth film where they revived him. You know, it was going to be like one of those where he can't transform back into the Hulk. And then, of course, in the last whatever scene in the climax, he somehow hulks out again. And so, I mean, it sounded like it was going to be pretty cool. And I think I would have liked to have seen it. But
so he died falling out of a plane. It's cool because the movies did like the opposite of that, where Ed Norton falls out of the plane. And right as he hits the ground, he turns into the Hulk.
Yeah.
And then they do that idea in Infinity War. You can't get the Hulk back out. So it's cool that they kind of took those ideas. I like that.
They did it in Ragnarok too, where it didn't work.
Oh,
He just landed on the bridge.
That's where he just landed on the bridge, yeah. Oh, man, yeah. But again, I guess it was going to be called Revenge of the Incredible Hulk. And so then it was going to be like the Hulk would be able to talk after being revived with Banner's mind. So yeah, they were going to do the Professor Hulk thing, which I think would have been really cool. And that was supposed to be in 1990, I think, or 92, something like that. But then of course, Bill Bixby passed away out of cancer in 93. And so it kind of didn't get done, which is a shame, but
because it was a cool idea.
It is a cool idea. I mean, even this episode tonight, this Thanksgiving episode, because this is my Thanksgiving episode this year, guys. Yay.
Happy Thanksgiving. Guys!
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You know, there's barely any Thanksgiving in it, by the way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it would have been a cool idea to see at some level Hulk and Banner's mind together, even in this era. I think it would have made this episode better.
Yeah.
But this was actually done before they had done the whole backstory with his dad. So they kind of put in that whole animus between him and his dad because of this episode, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah. I was wondering if I hadn't looked it up, but I was wondering if, you know, this was borrowing from the comics or what, because he kind of had this strained relationship with his dad, and his dad was kind of hot-headed himself. And and it's like, you know, so I just assumed they pulled from the comics, but
it was actually the other way around. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
It's superhero 101, right? Everyone has mommy and daddy issues. to become a superhero.
That's the only way you can actually, have the fortitude of mind, I guess, to get it done. But yeah, in the comics, Dr. Brian Banner was also a physicist, and he had run some experiments and stuff like that. And because of his experiments, he didn't want kids because he was afraid of what was going to happen to him. He was very abusive. He was an alcoholic. And so it, you know, it was just one of those where he kind of just despised the relationship that Bruce had with his mom, Rebecca. And so he was just very jealous. And of course, then he accidentally kills the mom. And so, yeah. And so then I think he actually commits suicide after that, if I can recall. It's been a while. I really don't remember. I just remember that he's raised by his aunt and she like is loving and very caring, things like that. And so that's how he gets close to his cousin, you know, Jennifer Walters, who becomes She-Hulk later on. And so, but yeah, so we kind of see that same thing where he's really close to his mom. The dad kind of has this tension with him, and that's exactly what happens in this episode. Yeah. Of course, the reasons are different. So mm-hmm. in this episode, the mom turns out she's dying. I don't think they specify what it's from.
Whooping cough, I imagine.
Probably. I can. Mm-hmm. I bet.
That's kind of what it looked like to me.
She goes through these spells mm-hmm. and where she gets like really sick. And I mean, she even tells her, oh, you know, this has happened before. It's okay. And the dad's like, no, we don't need a doctor. Your mom knows her body. She's good. Mm-hmm. It's terrible advice. Guys, yeah. If you're sick, go to a doctor, please.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, they ignore it. She passes away. He's very, very... what's the word there? He's
distraught,
very distraught. Yeah, he kind of holds broken a grudge. Broken. And that's the best word for it.
Yeah. And I got to say something about these flashbacks. Marvel's been on, yeah, Marvel's been on top of their de-aging game for quite a while now with some of these flashbacks. Because
did you find the dad as a younger man?
Hey, for 1978 to 1979. It was pretty good.
It was pretty good, yeah. You know, so that's why you got to use the hazy, you know, the gasoline lens there.
Right, right. You know, so.
But they established that at least in this version, because this, by the way, is canon. You know, in the Marvel universe, just like in DC, it's a multiverse. So there are different mm-hmm. There are different universes out there. So this is actually Earth 400005. Whereas mm-hmm. the mainstream comic universe is Earth 616.
Right. There is one universe where Helen Banner is She-Hulk.
Ooh, that's cool.
But I don't remember which number universe there is.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up. I don't know off the top of my head.
I do know she was just for this, created just for this TV show first, and then they took her in the comics, and then one.
Was she really?
Yeah. And then one multiverse was she was the She-Hulk.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Of course, nowadays it seems like everyone becomes Hulks. So it's just like, it's another one of those things where, okay, I don't mind a legacy character here and there, but when you make everyone do it, like that person's just really not special anymore.
Right.
You know, they did the same thing with the Ghost Riders. They've done the same thing with like the Flash, and everybody's connected to the Speed Force. And it's just like, mm-hmm. Guys, come on. Yep. But yeah, so in this particular universe, his dad owns a farm. It's like the Banner family farm. And, you know,
and it's getting it has a plague of worms, right?
There's, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially, there's a wealthy tycoon, of course, who wants to build, like the city of tomorrow.
Which is JR would show up.
I kind of was too. Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Well, it's the city of tomorrow in one building.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, he just has a plan, the model for one little building there, and so of course he wants to buy all this land, and that includes the Banner's farm. Uh-huh. And they've what we find out in the middle of the episode, but they actually engineer these particular beetles to. Mm-hmm. In their initial stage as worms, you know, before they go through their metamorphosis, they're actually very deadly to their crops. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so Banner's family is having just these problems. And so he kind of overhears this on TV. And so he decides to go check it out. And, you know, he has like the flashbacks of him and his sister sitting in like their little favorite spot. Cause in this universe, he has a sister. Mm-hmm. Which is really cool. And So, you know, he also has flashbacks of his mom. And so he goes to visit and basically gets caught. he lingers too long staring at the old house and gets caught by his sister. She's like, "What? You're alive?" And, you know, I love how she's just not angry at all. You know, she's just like
complete opposite reaction of dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is strange, but of course he's like, "No, you can't tell anyone I'm here. You know, I'm sick. I have an illness. I don't want anyone to know." And, you know, he's being very secretive, which I completely get, because there's that reporter, Jack McGee, that's like always after him, because he thinks that, at least in the pilot, it's implied that Hulk was implicated in the death of one of his coworkers.
Right.
And of course, that's not true, but, you know, oh well.
Sets him up to be on the run.
Pretty much, yep. And so he's been writing about this Hulk for a while. He's chasing him, and so he only makes a brief appearance later on in the episode. But so now because of that, because of the danger,
on the run because of the failed experiment, right?
Right, right. So a big plot point, at least in the earlier issues, was where Thunderbolt Ross was kind of after him, and you know he's believed now to be like the property of like the government,
stuff like that, right? You know? Now, and that was the Ed Ferrari. I mean, that's Marvel. Movie continuity, right, too, with Thunderbolts after him.
Yeah.
Although I did like that their retcon, it was actually an attempt to build the Super Soldier Serum again.
That was, that was.
I did like that. I did like that.
And that's actually something similar from the Ultimate Universe, Earth 1610. Mm-hmm. They kind of took that, and where it's like this, the entire Super Soldier Serum in general was like done from like mutant growth hormone and stuff like that. And so they really try to connect everything in that universe. And of course that was the reboot done in like the late 90s, early 2000s to for newer fans. So rather than just like DC does, where they kind of just reboot the entire universe, they just created another universe and just kind of built those comics up as well.
They and you see the movies take a lot of inspiration from that universe. I mean,
they Guardians, do. They really combine, team,
for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they really combine the you know, the Earth 616 with Earth 1610. Mm-hmm. And then they throw in a few original ideas here and there. And so but yeah, oh man, it would have been cool to see like some of the other superheroes or supervillains show up in this. I think this era of television would have been great to have him fight the Abomination or even just the Leader. I think the Leader would have been a great, you know, villain for one of these things. You didn't
Thunderbolt Ross. I know he wasn't the Red Hulk yet, but if he was created back then, like that would have been like a series finale, like Thunderbolt chasing him this whole time and then Hulk versus Red Hulk. That would have been awesome.
That could have been, really cool. I mean, there was like a lot of things they could have done, and I wish they had been able to do, but, you know, budgetary constraints and time constraints. And then again, a lot of the Hulk mythos wasn't really developed at this point. You know, a lot of the stuff that we really associate with the Hulk was done in like the 80s and 90s and stuff like that. So, so he goes back home. He meets his sister. She's like, "Stay," you know, and, you know, she's like, "Well, why did you come back then?" Of course, then he gets that line like, "Well, I don't want to spend another Thanksgiving alone," which is like, oh, his delivery just gets you right in the feels, man.
And of course, like you said, it would have been a perfect Christmas episode.
That's what I'm saying. That would have been like, if he had said that about Christmas, you know, and even if it was just like, you know, decorated at the time with like the tinsel garland and a tree, you know, something simple, it would have, I think, made such more of an impact.
Well, they do lead on that his mom passed away right around Thanksgiving.
That is true.
You know, so that could be, you know, a little bit more meaningful for the family. You know, Thanksgiving has a little bit more meaning.
Yeah.
Because of her passing. So
that's true.
Yeah, that is true. And so, yeah, eventually he hulks out.
Oh my god. So the Hulk,
because of a nightmare,
he hulks out. Oh, okay, that first Hulk out.
Yeah.
Okay. I was about to say, Lou Ferrigno's acting when it's him and his dad, when his dad gets up good in his face, like, if I was Lou Ferrigno, I would have been happy I finally got some deep acting to do. Like, that was really true. Good when he gets in his face and tells him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no. So he agrees to help because she's having a problem. Every single insecticide and everything they try cannot kill these worms that are eating the crops. And if they don't, then that this tycoon, Eckhart, is going to actually take over and basically take their farm. So he agrees to help on, you know, on the down low. And he's, you know, trying everything. And in the meantime, he stays at her place and he has a dream where he's kind of remembering. It's almost like a repressed memory kind of thing where he's remembering his mom. And, you know, it's, again, really, really good stuff there. Good. And so he just hulks out and she witnesses him changing into the Hulk, which I think was kind of cool. Yeah. I was like, well, a family member, finally someone gets.
And she took it very well too.
She sure did. Well,
I love that he hulked out in his sleep. Like,
yeah,
that makes sense to me. If he's having these nightmares, if he's having nightmares, heart rate's increasing, he's getting agitated in his sleep, it would make sense he could hulk out in his sleep.
That's a scary thought, though, man.
Really, I mean,
no wonder he isolates himself.
And I know I keep going back to the movies, but I love that bit with Liv Tyler in the original. Like, he can't get too excited.
When he keeps track of his heart rate.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. Like, he'd wear a heart rate monitor all the time to make sure he didn't get too agitated.
Well, yeah, and then of course at the ending of that movie, when he's there alone in the cabin and he's trying to, you know, practice his breathing and meditate, and then, you know, it ends, you know, with where the countdown goes, you know, days since last Hulk out or something, or since incident, and then it just counts down to zero and he opens his eyes and they're green. You know, I just thought that was a cool bit as well. But that makes sense why he would be in the middle of nowhere, just isolated away from everyone, because if he can turn in his sleep, I mean, who knows what could happen. So but yeah, so he hulks out, she witnesses it, and then the dad, I think, has, like, he hears something and he kind of sees something, grabs a shotgun, so the Hulk runs away. Because, yes, the Hulk is very depowered in this. Like, I think it said the max he could lift was like 10 tons, which is really, I mean, nothing. That's really nothing, you know, when you think about it. Compared to, I mean, Hulk is like a class, what is it, 100 plus hero nowadays. Yeah. So, yeah, that's really reduced. That's like Luke Cage levels there, you know.
Bing levels. And I know Bing is supposed to be as powerful as the Hulk, but I never bought that.
I never did either, honestly. Especially if his strength is based on his rage, you know. If you're really getting this guy mad, I mean, yeah, there's no way. But so, yeah, he kind of runs towards their secret spot, and, you know, he and his sister kind of meets him there and calms him down, and the dad follows in there. All of a sudden his son is alive because about this time he's depowered, you know, he's calmed down, he's reverted back to Banner, and his son is alive, and he buys their story that the thing hurt him or something, you know, that creature hurt him. Like, oh man,
tore,
like,
all his clothes,
see it running, and she's like, well, I heard it. Yeah. Like, no. But again, they kind of rehash. It's funny because he wants to, he keeps saying these things like, you know, I want to start over, I want to have a better relationship with my son, you know, I want you to stay on, and but like it's actually almost like a family drama kind of film, you know.
I mean, this is a pretty heavy episode, the stuff with his dad. When he, I mean, again, I go back to that scene where he's yelling in the face of the Hulk, telling him to, basically kind of like that scene in, like, Old Yeller, right? Go away, we don't want you anymore.
Essentially. Oh, yeah, to protect him.
But you can see in both of their faces, it's killing both of them. It's killing the Hulk hearing it, but
it was some good acting.
Dad saying it.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, so, of course, he comes up with a brilliant plan because, you know, his sister's like, well, you know, maybe we don't need an entomologist. Maybe we need a biologist. And so instead of coming up with like an insecticide, they come up with like a biological weapon, which is essentially is like a growth hormone. And it causes them to, the worms, to go through a premature transformation or metamorphosis into the beetles, which are completely harmless to the crops. And so it's like a brilliant technique, but somehow they kind of have an inside man, and it's
the
pilot, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So the pilot that does their crop dusting is like working for the tycoon Eckhart. And so he tells him about this thing. And so they break in and steal a sample, which is cool.
Oh, man. Okay, I love the chase after the plane where he jumps onto the plane, like hanging from the cockpit and hulks out.
And his dad's like just right there, you know, like 18 inches away, just looking at his sun change. So their plan is they're going to swap out the chemicals. They're going to try to make like a chemical fire, make it look like a fire. They're going to swap it out so that it's harmless. They'll spray and no big deal. And they got the airplane guy in on it. Mm-hmm. And so, he kind of, they're going to, they go to the airfield essentially after all this, and they're going to crop dust with the new formula. And he's noticing something strange on the ground. And this is where I wasn't exactly sure, because I had to watch it on my phone. I had to watch it, during my lunch break. So I didn't get to see in big detail, but it looks like he's looking on the ground. He notices that there's something wrong with the plane and that there might be something wrong with the actual material. And, right?
I think it's just the plane. I think
just the plane. He just notices the plane. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he gets conked on the back of the head as one is want to do with the Hulk. But he gets ambushed. They take him away. The bad guy's like, I swapped it out. He's calling his boss, which, come on, bad guy, don't call your boss from at that time. That's just bad henchman etiquette. Yeah. And so they're up in the air. They're not up in the air yet. They're about to take off, and he revives and he starts running after it. And this little prop plane, this crop duster, he's running after it, and he grabs on and he's like, "Dad, no." And, and he hulks out while he's
hulks out.
So his dad is looking at him, because this whole time he's been like super secretive with his dad, just like, why won't you tell me what's wrong? Just you and your secrets and, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, now his dad actually knows that it's him, and he turns into this crazy green monster. And he manages
somebody who looks like he just broke out of an insane asylum.
Well, they have that fright wig, that he's wearing. It's like dyed green. It's a bad wig. It is a bad wig.
He looks like he belonged on like Tales from the Crypt, like before it got big and got a budget.
Yeah.
And this is where the depowered Hulk shows up, because he's trying to hold that wing on so they could land.
Yeah.
And in the comics, he would have just grabbed his dad and the with one hand and the pilot in the other and just jumped off.
Yep. He would have just jumped. It would have been safe. The plane would have crashed. Yeah. No big deal.
Yeah.
But you're right. In this case, because the tampering that occurred was essentially, I guess, that the wing somehow was.
Yeah, they unbolted the wing.
Yeah. And so it was going to fly off. And so he grabs it, and he's actually kind of struggling, which I thought was an interesting choice. He's struggling to hold that on. And I get it. There's the force that's going through there is, while you're flying through the air. But still, it's just like, he's the Hulk, man. Come on.
Yeah.
And so they land the plane, and then I guess eventually they dust with the real stuff.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's what's implied. But
Eckhart goes to jail, they said. So I guess he's not going to buy it. The land now. So
yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is where we get that scene you're talking about, Anthony, where because people were coming and, the pilots and police and stuff like that. So, the dad trying to save him now that he knows the Hulk is his son is like, go, go away. You got to run. And he's just kind of looking at him with like the most, I can't even
describe expression.
Heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. It really is heartbreaking. He's just there like, but dad, it was good. It was so good.
And that once again he hits the road,
and he does.
Lonely man.
Yeah, we get the lonely man. But I love this little tag because this whole time they've been talking about Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. They really hadn't done anything except mention that, you know, the tycoon donates like a bunch of like 500 turkeys to needy mm-hmm. families. And you know, just the one time where he said the thing about another lonely Thanksgiving. And the dad, I think, has a line about, you know, this is the first Thanksgiving I can actually celebrate or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so except for a couple of mentions, we really don't. There's no indication that it's this time, except here. Now it's finally Thanksgiving Day. They've prepared the turkey. You can see it there on the table mm-hmm. With, you know, with the candles next to it and everything. And this is where Jack McGee, the reporter, is like, you know, like, I don't know. I can't believe it's a coincidence that creature is here. You know, the same creature that caused your brother's death and or whatever it is. And so it's just, it's great. Yeah. So they're like, well, you know what? We join us for Thanksgiving. And so they invite him to so purposely so that, you know, Bruce, well, I guess not Bruce, David.
Yeah.
I hate that. I'm just going to say Banner. So that Banner can actually go back on the road. And that's where we get that lonely man theme mm-hmm. just on that, oh, that piano. As soon as I hear it, it's mm-hmm. like, it just tugs at your heartstrings.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a great theme.
So, fun fact about this episode. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood did an episode on set. Mr. Rogers visited the set while filming this episode to show kids how the series was shot and how Lou Ferrigno is turned into the Hulk.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I know it took him 3 hours of makeup to get hulked out.
And we're talking a TV show here. So you're talking 5 days shooting a week. So you're talking... Mm-hmm. 3 hours on, probably at least two off. Like, you're talking 5 hours in the makeup chair plus a whole day of filming. Like, yeah. Again, that guy had to be channeling some real rage.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine. I got to say, I mean, I know this was not a very Hulk-heavy episode, mm-hmm. but I really liked it. I think it had quite a lot of emotional depth.
Mm-hmm. But you wanted a Thanksgiving episode because... If you go by the stereotype of the holiday, that's the holiday where all the family drama bubbles to the surface.
Right? That is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
The theme music, by the way, was done by Joe Harnell. And he was, he also did the music for like the Bionic Woman. But yeah, it's The Lonely Man is the name of it. And it's that sad solo piano. And it was always played during the closing credits. And so, you know, it's one of those that you just really associate with the Hulk.
Yeah.
And so apparently there was actually an album called The Incredible Hulk Original Soundtrack Recording, which I really want to get now.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It was a bunch of just like the episodes, just a bunch of the music from some of the various episodes. And so
that's one thing I noticed.
Find it by unsavory methods online.
Yeah. I'm sure you can. Yeah.
Well, that's one thing I noticed about this episode. I didn't remember how much music was through all these episodes, you know, normally, but there was a lot of music in the background more than I remember other TV shows at this time. But
yeah,
I could just not be remembered. Remember
apparently,
correctly.
On the album, there is a disco version of the theme.
Oh, boy.
Yes. The very last track is a disco version.
Disco remix.
Oh, man. Now I kind of want to buy it. Oh, man. But, apparently Harnell also did the score to V. Y'all remember V?
Oh, yes.
I do that remember V.
Scared me.
The heck out of me. Yeah,
scared
me too.
Scared me, but I could not turn away.
Same here. Yeah. Yeah. When they eat the mice, that was like mm-hmm. the worst part for me.
Mm-hmm. You know, the new one in the late 2000s is actually pretty good too.
That one I haven't seen. I remember thinking, oh, I got to check that out. And then I never did.
I did the same thing. I'm like, oh, I'm definitely watching that. And then never saw
it. Just never did. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, this is cool. I really enjoyed it. And of course, now you can actually find the made-for-TV films on Amazon Prime. They're on there. And then the show itself is actually on NBC, so you can find it on the NBC app mm-hmm. as well. So you can watch them all for free, including this episode, which is episode 8 of season 3, aired November 30th, 1979. Yeah, I liked it. I enjoyed it. But I got to ask, guys, what would you say is your happiest memory of the Incredible Hulk show or in this episode in particular, whichever one you want to do.
Do we have to do the show, or can we do the Hulk in general?
We can do the Hulk in general. I'm okay with that.
Okay. I'll go first, Bob, okay. If you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
It's probably that memory I mentioned earlier when Santa gave me that awesome freaking toy at the work party. But in recent years, so everyone who knows me knows I have a temper. That's not just a shtick on the podcast. That's a Italian trait I inherited. And it's road rage. It's just stress. It's always bubbling. And the Avengers film, that first one, really summed it up. And like the Hulk became my hero in that one, where Mark Ruffalo steps forward as that giant Chitauri ship or worm is coming down. And he says, "That's my secret, Captain. I'm always angry." And like he somehow learned to control this anger just below the surface and like tap into it at will. And it's like, I'm like the Hulk. Like I thought I was like the Hulk as a kid, and now I'm like the Hulk now as an adult. And like, that's awesome. So I just love seeing the Hulk done justice on the big screen in recent years. And I'm really happy we have Mark Ruffalo playing him. So
right on.
Yeah. My happiest memory of the Hulk is I talked about collecting the Joe Fixit run there through the early 90s. And there was one episode in particular. It was just kind of a self-contained episode. It was kind of a transition between storylines where he comes in contact with the Blob and Pyro and somebody else.
Maybe and, Avalanche.
It was Avalanche. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of self-contained, you know, 3-1 kind of fight.
Nice.
Kind of thing. And I remember I read that book so many times because I liked it so much. And then I remember when the episode came out where it was Hulk and Wolverine on the cover and they were dressed in matching white tuxedos and seeing that on the newsstand and just being so excited, you know, for that. So those are some of my happiest memories of the Hulk. Of course, you know, keeping up with the cartoon and the TV show and mm-hmm. just being a fan, you know, all round fan of him as well. But
so if we're going Hulk in general, I think my happiest memory would be watching an episode of Spider-Man and the Amazing Friends where he actually comes out. Although it turns out it's not him. It's a robot created by Mysterio. But, I mean, I remember like, whoa, the Hulk, you know, kind of a thing. And then other than that, it would be, it would be just watching it every time it came on. Especially on the reruns, it was one of those that I tried my best not to miss because I loved when he would Hulk out and, you know, like save the day, you know, right. I mean, of course he ended up causing a lot of damage and sometimes he would scare people but you know, it was just one of those like, exactly.
Yeah. If I was going to talk about the show, mine would be, when I was a kid, we would go to my grandma and grandpa's house during the day when mom and dad went to work. And they had cable TV and we didn't have cable at the house because dad worked for a CBS affiliate. So, you know, we weren't going to have cable. We were going to watch what we could over the air. And I just remember summers at grandma and grandpa's house. And it was like 2 p.m. or something that came on one of the cable networks. And every day just watching an episode of the Hulk at grandma and grandpa's house, you know, through the summer. So.
Nice.
If we were going to go the show, mine would probably be, so again, I watched this show after school a lot growing up with Batman 66 and Wonder Woman and all those shows. And I just remember, because, you know, I wasn't alive as it was airing, when I found out there was, and it was split into multiple episodes, even though it was a movie, when I found out Daredevil showed up, I freaked out. I geeked out the first time I found that out. I was so excited to see him pop up. So that would probably be my favorite memory of the show.
Right on. Yeah. That's a good one. And I really enjoy that one a lot more than the Thor one.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oof. Poor guy.
It's not a high bar.
That Thor couldn't even show up on Hercules, the TV show.
No. Yeah, poor guy. They didn't do him justice at all, but oh well.
I mean, The Adventures in Babysitting Thor looked better than that.
Which is also Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh, yeah, he was.
That guy's great at everything.
He is. He's such a good, the best kingpin. He was a good Thor. Oh, well, he wasn't really Thor, but you know.
You know what? Which performance of his is really underrated? And just because it's so hard to do, his Men in Black one where he's possessed by the bug alien.
Oh, yeah.
That must be so hard to play, though. Like, somebody else is controlling your actions while you're just like dead. Essentially, like he was really good in that movie.
He was good in everything. Yeah, yeah, he's just a phenomenal actor, and yeah, you're right. I hope they bring him into MCU either proper. The Spider-Man, yeah, the MCU proper, either in a Spider-Man show, or if they revive Daredevil on Hulu, or if they do Daredevil movie. I mean, just anything, they got to use him because he was so good. And same thing with Charlie Cox. Game. They have to keep Charlie Cox.
I'm not as high on him, but he was good. I love that show. But I mean, if they were going to keep one, keep Vincent D'Onofrio.
Well, if they could only keep one, yeah. But
he's game for it, too. He wants to come. He's always tweeting out like subtweets about the new Spider-Man films and everything about how Kingpin and him always face off.
So it's true, they did.
He wants to be in it.
Which is funny because I always thought Kingpin was just a better fit for Daredevil because Spider-Man's just too powerful, you know? Well, that's why Kingpin always had to, you know... always had to hire out folks to fight Spider-Man.
Well, now that it's implied, now that we know Doctor Strange is going to be in Spider-Man, and this is after Multiverse of Madness, and you know Jamie Foxx is coming back as Electro.
As Electro.
We're getting across the Spider-Verse, like live action. Like, how cool would it be like to see Defoe as the Green Goblin again? We already know Jamie Foxx is going to be in it, or how cool would it be to have all these... You could bring the Daredevil series into it. Even if
I hope they do. Yeah.
You know, bring Tobey Maguire, have me another Spider-Man from the year. It would be so many cool possibilities if they go that route.
I'm very intrigued. I want to know what it's going to be about.
I feel it's not a coincidence to announce Jamie Foxx coming back as Electro, and then a week later we find out Doctor Strange is going to be in it. Like, that to me, it's got to be some multiverse bending thing.
I hope so.
It's probably all going to hinge on WandaVision.
Yeah, you're probably right, because I know that's supposed to lead right into the Doctor Strange movie.
Right.
Well, that was the opposite way. Oh, no. You're, no, because WandaVision is out November, right?
This right.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
I can't wait. I'm so excited. I'm ready for new Marvel stuff.
Me too.
So. I'm ready for new content in general. Yeah. I miss movies in general.
Yeah.
Well, that's
bring
true.
Bring me back to the theater.
Well, you like, were always tweeting, I used to see this movie.
Every weekend, and now, like, nothing, and it kills me.
I remember thinking, like, how does he go to the movies this often? And then I realized, oh, he doesn't have kids.
Yeah.
That's how.
Yeah, I know. And now they push Batman into
2022.
Who knows if I'll have a kid by then?
Yep.
Yeah.
It'll have to be a date night or something. Yeah. Have your parents watch the kid.
I mean, it's Batman.
Thank them.
It's Batman.
It's true. But now we come to my favorite part of the show, which is a little segment I like to call Gag Me with the Spoon. So this is where we do our best impression of our least favorite part of the episode. Now, as a guest, I'll let you go first. Of course, I'll leave it up to you listeners to see who had the best impression. But the winner can only get bragging rights, I think. Or perhaps they might have a new Totally Red Christmas sticker on their way. Either way, guys, you can go first and just set up the scene for us.
All righty. Well, I'm going to take a little bit different approach to this because I have a feeling that this episode, if your listeners get a chance to watch it, will be in the Guinness Book of World Records for the world's windiest TV episode ever filmed. So I don't know. It must have been some strong Santa Ana winds there in Southern California. And that was for at least 75% of the episode, and it was a little bit distracting to see all that wind. So my gag me with the spoon will be the wind, and I hope this comes across the microphone okay. But
that's brilliant.
I don't know how I can follow that. I don't think I can. But I'm just going to go with the always classic line that Lou Ferrigno has in every single episode of the show as the Hulk, where he's like,
that's a good man. I feel bad because I can't match any of that. I actually went with Bruce's sister. So I'm gonna try to do my best girl voice here, but which, who, by the way, she's the actress, what's her name, Muldaur, that played Dr. Polanski from Star Trek Next Generation. Mm-hmm. But
oh yeah,
but anyway, yeah, so this is Dr. Helen Banner. And this is where she tries to convince him to stay, and she says, I can't do the girl voice. Besides, you owe me one. Remember that doll you ruined? The one I got for my 5th birthday? You dissected her in the name of science.
Which is totally something Bruce Banner would do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, man, that's a terrible line, though. But so, yeah, I will leave it up to you listeners. You guys can vote on which one you like best. I have a feeling I'm going to continue my losing streak, and that is okay. But, you know, guys, G.I. Joe taught us that knowing is half the battle. So what would you say is the other half?
Well, I would say when your mother's on her deathbed, be sure you can outrun your dad's truck to the house.
that's a good point. Yes.
I have two. I would say one, there's a superhero for all of us. For Anthony, there's two: Batman and the Hulk. For Angry Anthony. And the second lesson I would ask him to keep in mind is the true definition of a hero. A hero kills people. People do some harm. A hero is part human and part supernatural. A hero is born after childhood trauma or out of a disaster and must be avenged.
That's way deeper than mine. Mine is just, if knowing is half the battle, then the other half is being a biologist so you can save your estranged family's farm after a surprise visit. Oh man, guys, this is a lot of fun. Todd, Anthony, it's always a blast talking to you guys. Yes. You know, there's never a dull moment. I genuinely enjoy every little minute of it. So, you know,
we said it off mic before, but like, again, I sat on my show many times. The podcast network, the friends, the true, genuine, really great, like, honestly, some of the best friends I have made through this network, and that's like the best thing that's come out of all these shows.
Yep, same
absolutely.
Here. Yep.
Absolutely.
So on that note, tell me about your shows.
Go ahead, Anthony.
I am a member of Tis the Podcast, along with two of my co-hosts, who you have heard on the show before, Tom and Julia. And we are the podcast that is determined to keep the Christmas spirit alive 366 days a year by covering movies and television shows. Christmas, all Christmas themed, obviously. And as we are in the midst of year four now, we are doing some pretty deep cuts. And discovering why everybody loves the same 10 Christmas movies. And the same 10 movies are shown every year on TV ad nauseum. But it's a fun show, tons of trolling and impressions and just laughs aplenty. So, and you'll hear these fine gentlemen on multiple episodes. I mean, Jerry's clearly vying for a spot on the show. I'm just going to try to convince him to take Tom's spot, not mine. But yeah, so check it out. You can visit our website, kissapodcast.com. And check out our Facebook group as well, because that's a really fun community. You can chat with us in real time, chat with a bunch of awesome listeners, Jerry and Todd and just everyone. Like, so you can access that to podcast.com/Facebook group. So
right on.
Yep. And you can catch me on Christmas Clatter. It's a podcast. We've gone to weekly episodes now through Christmas. And we just celebrate everything that makes Christmas special. We talk about movies and music, and we are going to talk about food and decorations and even those quiet moments of reflection that happen around the holidays that are so important to everybody. And
every now and then he hosts a fight that is rigged like an old boxing match, like in Daredevil, where somebody is forced to throw the unfair fight. And yeah, anyway, continue time.
Yes. And you'll hear Anthony on there, Crash and Burn on the on Christmas Platter. And Jerry's been on before. I'm sure he'll be on again. We have guests. We have once Christmas is over, we'll be twice a month. And once a month, we have a Christmas conversation when we sit down and just talk with someone about their love for Christmas and just see where it takes us. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Christmas Clatter Podcast or Clatter Podcast on Twitter. And follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We're doing a series called Christmas with Purpose. It's just a way to give you guys some tips and tricks on how to make your Christmas special and not let the time slip away from you too fast during the holidays. So.
Right on. Yeah, both of those are two of my favorite podcasts. You have to check them out. Make sure you subscribe, give them reviews, 5-star reviews. I mean, it's just great, great, great stuff there. It doesn't get any better than that, especially this holiday season. You'll want to definitely check them out.
Jerry's not only saying that because he's basically become a honorary co-host of both shows.
Maybe.
Well, I'll just say for your listeners, Jerry, Tis the Podcast is going to celebrate its 200th episode next year. So
wow.
We're kind of looking. Looking at, doing like a clip show, like pulling some clips from old shows, doing montages, and we post our listeners what running gag throughout the show's history would you like to see? Mm-hmm. And a listener on Instagram, Rebecca Bowl, who I actually know from college, said, you should do a montage of every time Jerry's name is mentioned on the show.
Oh, no.
GJ Jerry Davila.
Yeah, we'll definitely hear that. Yeah. Oh, man. It's always fun talking to you guys. Yeah, I feel like I should perhaps write some songs for y'all. I might be working on an album of songs based on some of our podcasts,
yeah,
things like that. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
I'll write a Christmas Tis the Podcast memory for that for you guys.
Right on.
My favorite memory of Tis the Podcast.
Which is what? I'm curious.
I'll have to think about it. There was one episode, and I'd have to go back and listen. For those that don't know, I carry mail for a living, and I was walking down delivering mail on North Middle Street in my town. I don't remember what episode it was, but there was some banter between Tom and Anthony, and I literally had to put my hands on my knees and double over because I was laughing so hard there in the middle of the street.
And just so our listeners know, Jerry's coming up in a very special Festivus for the Rest of Us episode on December 23rd. Festivus.
It was pretty fun. Yeah.
Can't wait to hear that.
Yep, Anthony does not crash and burn in that one. Oh, yeah.
That's no, right up his alley.
It was a very fun episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a lot of fun talking about it. It was long. I remember it was long.
Oh, I think that's our longest episode. I think it comes in at exactly 2 hours. So wow. But I think we're 2 days before Christmas. It's a nice Christmas tree for everyone.
For real.
But, speaking of angry characters, if Jerry and Tom said I sounded exactly like George Costanza in that episode, so you did. I'm sensing a beam. Batman, the Hulk, George. Like,
I remember that there was there was a moment where it's like, wow, this is totally totally Seinfeld, and you're George. Like, what's the deal with Anthony? Anyway, that was a terrible Seinfeld, but anyway.
No, it was pretty good. That was good.
Well, then I guess I better go out on a high note. So I'm going to end it by saying thanks again, guys. And This is the first Thanksgiving that I've ever had any reason to celebrate. So check us out on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're feeling like Stan Lee and Jack Kirby creating a comic book powerhouse, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now don't forget to vote. Excelsior. Or later, dudes.